Hello, everyone, and we welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. This morning is Sunday, January 6, 2019. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Plainfield, New Jersey, an independent church. And we are in the United States of America, and we are so glad you all could join us today. And we will start with our morning prayer.
From page 220, Miscellany, by Mary Baker Eddy. Each day I pray for the pacification of all national difficulties, for the brotherhood of man, for the end of idolatry and infidelity, and for the growth and establishment of Christian religion, Christ's Christianity. I also have faith that my prayer availeth, and that he who is overturning will overturn until he whose right it is shall reign. Each day I pray, God bless my enemies, make them thy friends, give them to know the joy and the peace of love.
Thank you. And Mary Baker Eddy, Miscellaneous Writings. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Okay, this morning I think we will start with the watching point.
Watch number 259. Watch lest, when you have apparently exposed a person, place, or thing as being a channel for error, that you feel you must take up the channel personally. In reality, mortal mind is the only error. And even though we may need to destroy a belief in error as operating through some channel, we must hold in thought that we are striking a blow at the source of all error, and not at the channel. We must realize that since God owns and controls all channels, error has none and can find none to use. The right stand is to declare that everything and everybody is a channel for God's love, and therefore can only bless and heal, and that no false testimony or influence of mesmerism can blind us to this fact. When a person is exposed as being a channel for some phase of error, you do not see it as person any more than you would accuse a puppet of malicious purpose if it should strike you. The one manipulating the puppet would be the malefactor in the case. Hence, when you see that is mortal mind and not person that is responsible for error, your work against it becomes impersonal. Then, because you love the channel, you run no risk of arousing resentment in the individual in question, and thus having your efforts in the right direction hindered. End quote.
Thank you. This is a very important point. I've heard many so-called Christian scientists are always very afraid and superstitious that, oh, you know, there's somebody malpracticing on me or some channel. And that's just the wrong sense of what's going on here, what the truth of it is. Through the law case, we had to learn this lesson, and one thing we were taught here, and it's in this watching point, that the only power God gave anyone is what?
To bless.
Yeah. If you know that, you are immune to all of this, oh, well, there's some person out there malpracticing on me or some channel. In this morning session, we're going to really get into a great sense of the omnipotence, omnipresence, and omniscience of God. A beautiful lesson that Fairley wrote. That's wonderful, and I'm very grateful for it. Now, getting Gary mentioned in his testimony about an impersonal attack on Wednesday when he had to read. And I know someone was asking him what that meant. So what does that mean? What is this impersonal attack we talk about?
It's error, evil, trying to stop the good, trying to interfere with anything that God has in mind for it to go on, or anything that God has planned, and it just can't be done.
And we know that because we know that evil, error, is not real, because God is omnipotent. And so we deal with it that way. But if you see it as a person, or even if Gary said, well, I went out in the cold and that's why he was having a sore throat, if you give it some problem, give it some cause, some material reason, history, then you're in it. You're in the mud with it. But if you know it is an impersonal attack on what you have to do for God, then you can handle it effectively.
Right. And just as when you see error using somebody else, you see that as an impersonal error and not as the person or the channel, as you will. When error attacks you, not through a person, but seems to, you know, when you attacks you through either sin or disease, it's an attempt to get you to believe that there's a power other than God. And it's not you. It's not something wrong with you. It's an impersonal, erroneous belief trying to persuade you that there's something other than God that you have to pay attention to.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions?
That's why Wednesdays are so difficult usually, because Aaron doesn't want you to pray for the service. He wants to keep it from going forward. And it's not, you know, your boss is a jerk or something like that. It's just error trying to distract you from doing the work for God.
Yes.
I think it's important to strive, or at least be striving to do it across the board in any erroneous situation, because sometimes it seems easier to do it with other things than others. For example, if it's somebody doing something, it's kind of, there's a hesitation to impersonalize it. It's as if you get some pleasure attaching it to the person and keep it going. But I think across the board, wherever there's error, that's why I like Eustace when he talks about even a germ being good. Because if all is God, then we have to see that every error or erroneous thing that comes up, is we have to impersonalize it.
Thank you very much.
And we were taught early on that if you undertake anything to do for God, there's going to be opposition, and things are going to get thrown in your path, and so just expect it. Just say, oh, okay, that's what this is, and handle it that way.
Certainly is a lot easier to deal with it when it comes up, knowing it's going to come up. It's been a great help to me, is that everybody here was very open that, you know, we had to ride out and meet it, so to speak.
Yeah, and Jesus spent a lot of time warning his disciples to be ready for it.
Another thing that's been helpful to me is to realize that error can come up with many different forms or faces or different types of appearances. And it does is to try to, like, get your attention, try to get your establish some credibility for it. But if you can look beyond the surface appearance of how it comes about and see what the intent is, you realize it's the same old devil trying to put up a different face to publish, to get you to stop the work. Your error can't do anything except suggest, and it, The only thing it hopes is that we would stop the work. Can't make it stop. Just suggest you stop.
Thank you. Thank you. If you deal with error in this way, this impersonal way, remember, it's always the human mind. It's a counterfeit of the truth. It's not actual real, but it tries to present itself as real. But if you can impersonalize it, you will find your work in science so much more effective. Because it is, that's the truth. This is the truth of the matter. But if you see it as a person or whatever else, and as Florence said, sometimes it's tempting to see it as a person. Maybe that's one of the hardest things, to separate the error from the person. Love the person, but recognize the error coming through them as impersonal, to try to, I mean, you can ask, what is it trying to do?
And that includes yourself.
Yes.
But it tries to come through you.
Yes, thank you.
And the more that I'm learning about what is real and what is true through all of the work in this church, it makes it easier to identify what's not real or good and to handle it that way.
Very good.
Thank you. And the more active you become in church, the more it's going to pop up. That's what Jeremy, I mean, he gets it a lot because he's
doing a lot.
He's doing a lot. And so, but now he can laugh at it. And so can I when it comes. Like, oh, brother, here it is again. You can laugh at it.
Yeah, and that is the best thing to do.
Yeah, the best thing. Aaron does not like to be laughed at.
I said to it, oh, it's you again?
it usually shows his hand too quickly, so.
Well, you see, you're getting wise to it, and this is the wisdom of God. It'll come as, you know, a daughter or spouse or something, maybe attacking you in some way. 5 minutes before service is to start, and you can just say, okay, well, disengage.
Yeah. I read, it's funny, really, I read one elderly worker working with a patient, and one error keeps coming back all the time, so he said, oh, is that the bread and butter again? I thought it was so funny.
Yeah, good. Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to, yesterday I mentioned at the Bible study, Daniel and his prayer. We're going to go a little deeper into how he prayed. And Martha Wilcox, The Reciprocal Law of Being. Jeremy kindly looked it up for me because I wasn't sure which article it was in. And one of them was Our Mission in the World as Individual. And the other was which briefly referred to in Mrs. Wilcox's article on business. So, now listen, this is extremely important that you understand this. It's a rule, it's one of the rules and principles of the universe, and it is definitely how Daniel proved the allness of God in the lion's den. And that was no easy feat. So, on page 248 of the Wilcox book, Mrs. Eddy speaks with emphasis about prayer. She says, "One thing I have greatly desired and again earnestly request, namely, that Christian scientists here and elsewhere pray daily for themselves, not verbally nor on bended knee, but mentally, meekly, importunately." And that's in miscellaneous writing. And then, do we as individuals pray daily for ourselves, not for someone else, nor for something else, but for ourselves? Jesus is our example. He spent hours in prayer. Now, first she takes up praying mentally. And are we really grateful for the fact that we can pray mentally? We can pray anywhere. You can be on a busy subway. You can be in the quiet of your home, but you can be anywhere. You can be up in a plane. You can pray anywhere. Are we grateful for that? We can have audience with God anywhere, any time of the day, day or night. And then she goes into praying meekly. When we pray meekly, our state of mind is one of calmness and sureness and innocency, a state of pure consciousness, wherein God's reciprocal law of being is in operation universally. Daniel, when in the lion's den, understood this reciprocal law of being. His mind was not dual. He did not believe that his mind was God's presence, and also believed there was a wicked king and ferocious beast outside his mind. Daniel, because of his conscious oneness and completeness and perfection with divine mind, knew that he included the king and the lions of God's creation within himself. And Daniel knew that the king and the lions, because of their conscious oneness and completeness and perfection with divine mind, included him within themselves. The king and the lions were in Daniel's completeness and perfection, and Daniel made up something of the king's and the lion's completeness and perfection. Daniel knew that God or mind was verified in that very place as one and all. He knew that he and the king and the lions were reciprocal to each other, and each and all were governed by God's reciprocal law of being. It was Daniel's sureness of this reciprocal law of infinite good that dispelled the seeming evil in his individual consciousness and in the consciousness of the king and the lion. Now, yesterday we talked about the importance of not hating. And this is how you don't hate. Because, you see, if he had seen, well, hated, could have even hated the king for making such a stupid mistake. But if he'd seen them all in that light, he'd seen them all as evil, then you're stepping outside the law of the universe, which said that God created everyone, and behold, they were good. So here he is impersonalizing the whole situation again and not letting himself believe in a lie, believe that there were ferocious beasts, believe that there were these conspirators. He saw it, I'm sure, as opposition to the work he was doing. It was big opposition, but it came. And because he saw it that way, he could realize its utter nothingness and overcome it.
And that is divine love and the power of divine love.
One of the things that struck me was that I always saw Daniel's stories kind of separate, but I realized in all this process that he was really freeing his people. And so really there would be opposition because that's what he was doing. And that's what he was doing all along the whole time he was there and working with all the kings. And he would speak to them and even address their evils sometimes and call them out. But eventually his people were freed. All that work.
He never forgot Jerusalem. That's why he put his face toward Jerusalem. He was always working and praying for the freedom of his people.
And he was faithful at every step. So when the lion's den came, it wasn't all at once. It seemed like this gigantic thing. This is today's obstacle to overcome. So.
Yes. So remember this. At one time in my life, I felt I was in a very unjust, unfair situation, and I felt totally trapped by it, and there was the huge temptation for me to hate, to want revenge, to lash out. But I remember reading this. I remember thinking, well, if I think that there are these evil people around me doing this evil thing to me, then I'm not being a Christian Scientist. I have to understand this. In Science and Health, on 4/5/14, Mrs. Betty says, understanding the control which love held over all, Daniel felt safe in the lion's den, and Paul proved the viper to be harmless. This understanding of love's control over all, including, yes, the lions, the people that conspired against, everyone was being controlled by love. And then Mrs. Eddy said, all of God's creatures moving in the harmony of science are harmless, useful, and indestructible. A realization of this grand verity was a source of strength to the ancient worthies. It supports Christian healing and enables its possessors to emulate the example of Jesus. And God saw that it was good. So, this must be our standpoint. And this is how you demonstrate the omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence of God. Not just saying the words every day, but getting into it and really feeling it and using it when you're in difficult situations.
And I'll repeat, because it's worth repeating, that to see others correctly, see others as separate from the error that's handling them, that is love. That is divine love. And that is what is power. That is what saved Daniel, by seeing the king correctly, by seeing the conspirators correctly, by seeing the lions correctly as all part of God's creation. He didn't condone the error. But he rose above the situation by seeing everything as God's creation. And that is divine love, and that is what has power to heal everything.
That's a light bulb moment. That's why error just disappears then.
That's right. That is exactly right.
Yep.
It is why error disappears then, the light bulb moment. And I have proved it in my own life, and I've seen it being proved by, in the lives of many others. And this helped me. Martha Wilcox is a wonderful book, and this helped me impersonalize and see what was trying. And I see now that experience that I had at that time. It was trying to kill me. It was trying to get me to give up. It was trying me, and it would have, if I had lashed out, if I had hated, I would not be sitting here today. It would have, in one way or the other, it would have destroyed me. But I kept to this. I kept to Mrs. Eddy's article, Taking Offense and Loving Your Enemies. And because I did, I was working the science when being tried. And that's what we must do, and we do get tried. To the point you feel your life is in jeopardy, as it certainly was with Daniel. So what are you going to do then? Are you going to throw in the towel and scream and complain and where's God? Or are you going to hunker down? And when you do, and all of this that I thought was about to destroy me, it's just this Ishardi. When I got through the trial, the period of being tested, it all vanished. It all left. And now I can look back and say it was no more than a bad dream. In fact, it's easy to say, oh, wow, well, that was really nothing. Well, it was really nothing, but at the time it was very much something. So understand the science and work the science. Understand these words. They're to be used. Omniscience, omnipresence, omnipotence. There is nothing else. And when something appears, it seems to be something else. It is some form, some illusion, trying to get you in some way to compromise yourself. And if you stand strong and see it for what it is and impersonalize it, you will come through it. And you will find yourself light years ahead of where you once were when you believed in its reality. That's why when people haven't gone through this and they quote the words of science, it's so shallow and annoying because they haven't proved it. So it's just words, and they're usually just saying the words to hide the fear that's hiding. But once you've been through it and have actually proved it, then you can say the words with authority.
What does Mrs. Eddy say when the more difficult the human situation to be overcome, what does she say is required?
Pure our faith, stronger love.
No.
Pure our love and stronger our faith.
Yes. The stronger our faith and the purer our love. What Mary is describing is a purer love. There's nothing human about it. There's nothing personal about it. It's the allness of God. The allness of God and His creation. And the reality of what's around you, seeing it correctly as God's creation.
And all day you have these times to do this. Air will present itself and tell you it's real. Whether it says it's flu season, or you have a difficult boss, or you have, you know, ticks crawling all over you. I don't know, whatever example you want. I'm trying to tell you, well, God's not all and there's an evil presence and power. So that is your time to understand this principle. And if you do, whatever would seem to harm you in any way, you can overcome. You have to have the courage to do it, as Daniel did. And he had the courage because he prayed to his God three times a day. He said it wasn't something he conjured up at this last moment, something he lived.
And if someone is doing something to you that you find so unbearable, so bad, so wrong, don't hate them, but pity them. If you must.
In the story with Master Daniel and Lion's Den, when they got thrown in and destroyed by the lions, it's very not a good way to go. So it's easy to pity if you think that's the direction it's headed. I don't want people to be destroyed like that. I would rather them be lifted up.
Well, and let God's divine justice be done. We don't have to outline for God.
I think that's why we're here, though, so that people realize we have a choice. So they don't have to go down that way. I think of that every time I had a testimony. Somebody somewhere is where I was before, and I would love to reach out to them and let them know who's available.
And you see, these people that are doing the evil, they are to be pitied in many ways, much more than the person that they're doing the evil to, because what kind of a, I mean, they're obviously such a wrong state. And I think it was Barbara that wrote on the forum, what made Daniel different than the others? And what was it?
You said there was an excellent spirit in him.
Thank you. There was a spirit in him, spiritual sense. He had the spiritual sense in him. And for those who think they don't have it or lack it, it's something that you can develop. That's the thing. That's why we meet every week. I found it interesting in that book on Christian Healer, where Mrs. Eddy's doing all these amazing healings all over the place. Well, she says that anyone can do it, and she expects everyone to do it. And in Science and Health, she says, good morals, yes, that's going to help you. You can't be an immoral person. But if you start out that way, you can change. So everyone can do this. There's no one that can't do it. And by doing it, I'm talking about healing and demonstrating the omniscience, the omnipresence, and omnipotence of God in their life. But how much do you desire it? How much time do you devote to it? Look at the time that Daniel devoted to it. So if you don't, and you just want to be, you know, just flipping around or leading your materialistic life, then fine, just be honest about it and well, go to them.
Don't pretend to be something else.
Yeah, don't pretend. Because that's what gives science such a bad name, or these people who say they're Christian Scientists. I mean, I've talked to people, believe me, and I know Florence has too. They start off telling me, I'm a third generation Christian Scientist. I was class taught, and then they proceed to let me know they know nothing about the science. Even telling me that shows me they know nothing about the science. Because it all that doesn't matter. So let's know the science. Let's read Science and Health and Prose Works. Let's know it. Let's work it. And don't just spout off. Any more comments or questions?
On the watching.
And on the reciprocal. What does that word mean? I didn't look it up. What does reciprocal mean?
Well, the reciprocal in fractions is when, like, 1/4 of the reciprocal would be 4/1. So.
Yeah, okay. Reciprocal means it goes both ways.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. It goes both ways. It goes, includes everyone. And how important. You don't think, well, I know my truth. I'm a good person and I know my truth, but all these other people don't. Everybody else is, and including the lions who are ferocious. So you see, that's not doing it. You're thinking you're good, but everyone else is bad. And so that's not a good thing. So remember this. And
it's the pointing the finger, right?
Yeah, you're pointing the finger. You are good. But everyone else, you've lived a good life. You are so good. And yet all this terrible stuff is happening to you and everyone else is not good. That's not omniscience, omnipresence, omnipotence. Always go back to that. And that is having no other gods before the one God.
And it's helped me a lot about this idea of how much I know. I read in Betty's works where she described herself when she said, the little that I've learned so far, of all people, Mary Baker Eddy herself said, the little that I've learned so far. So it cured me of thinking like, oh, I really know something.
Very true. So, okay, well, today we will start with the subject God. Golden text, Revelation. Alleluia, for the Lord God omnipotent reigneth. And I love what Shahidat wrote. I think she's on, isn't she? Shahidat, you want to say what you wrote? It was short and sweet on the forum. Shahida, okay, well, I'll tell you. She wrote that good thing to start your day with that thought. The thought that God is all presence and all power, and hallelujah. Start with a rejoicing. And don't get into all the glumness, but start with rejoicing. All right? All right, now, that was a wonderful thought, Shahidat. I don't know, Suzanne, do you want to mention anything more about what you wrote about praying on the forum? Is she there? Oh, goodness.
I'm here.
Okay.
I was muted.
Oh.
What did I say about praying?
Well, that's all right. If you don't remember, we will move on. We'll go to Jeremy being enlisted.
Oh, yeah. I was really grateful for being put onto that thought, thinking about how, you know, what the difference between a human way to enlist in the Army might be, you know, the aim to lessen another country's dominance or threat. And then the methods used would be to overcome that through material means. And in Christian Science, as she says, the Christian Scientist has enlisted to lessen evil, disease, and death. And he will overcome them by understanding their nothingness and the allness of God or good. And what different aims and methods Christian Science has compared to that. And definitely works so that whatever blesses one, blesses all. Really great.
And what was the definition of enlist?
To engage in public service by entering the name in a register. And that brought me to enlistment. And enlistment is the act of enlisting, the writing by which a soldier is bound. So I just was thinking, well, the writing we're bound by is the Bible and Science and Health, the key to the Scriptures.
Yeah, and that idea, engaging in public service. Remember that this is always what we're doing. Jesus always knew he was what?
He was a servant.
He was would wash his disciples' feet. So remember this. Remember that's what we all are. Servants. That's why the who shall be greatest is so offensive. If you have the spirit of a servant, you're not going to be wondering who's going to be greatest.
And he was always out with the public, and Mrs. Eddie Sherwin, and the public eye.
Thank you. Yes. They did spend time alone in prayer, absolutely required, but they also went out and were amongst people. Because, well, I've just known people, and actually I was one of them. I didn't want to be amongst people because I didn't know how to love, I didn't know how to speak up, I didn't know how to do a lot of things, and it made me very uncomfortable to be with people. And that's not science. I mean, look at Jeremy.
Definitely. I was just telling Linda this morning that being somewhat known, even in this circle, it's something I have to put on the altar because it was not the way that I wanted to be with my life. But I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve.
Well, didn't Jesus say, "Let your light so shine"? For what reason?
So they may see your good works.
And they see your good works, yes, and glorify your Father, which is in heaven.
And a sign you're getting this science is that you do feel a love for people, and you do want to be with them. You don't want to just stay in your house and be a loner. Mrs. Evans used to love to talk about loners. They were basically they're hiding out, and she loved people. I mean, she could give a rebuke like no one else, but she also loved people. She loved people. She always wanted to be with people. And what is it? How can you love God if what?
If you don't love the people you see.
Yeah.
You don't love your brother.
The brother that you.
So. Yeah, so if you struggle with that, then know it's something to be overcome, as I had to learn. That was one of the hardest things for me. I thought, goodness, she's with people all the time, or a lot of times. I just don't want to, I just want to hide out in my house. But I had to learn how to be with people, how to love people divinely, not humanly, but divinely. And that is just in many of the ways we've talked about. Not to take things personally, but to love is God love. And Gary likes to give that testimony about enlistment, right?
Yeah, when I first came here, Mrs. Evans used to talk about being in an army. And that used to always kind of rub me the wrong way, because I had no interest in ever being in an army. Well, that's not true. But I had the idea of having to be in an army, you know, having to fight or whatever. Just, I thought, you know, my concept of Christian Science was, you know, you're already over everything. You don't have to fight. Be diplomatic, you know, resolve issues, you know, peacefully and that sort of stuff. And I always had difficulty in confrontation. I always had difficulty in, you know, difficult human situations. And I wondered why I was having all these difficulties. Finally sunk in. You have to take a stand. You have to be willing to say, thus far and no farther. Get thee behind me, Satan. And it's not a personal thing. But you have to be willing to put the kibosh on anything that takes you away, takes your peace. And once I kind of woke up to the idea that, okay, I'll enlist. Because there were, I didn't have a choice. It was either that or be miserable for the rest of my life. Once I realized, you know, enlisting is what you have to do, then all of a sudden things started working out, and I started feeling the dominion that God has for all of us.
Thank you. And gives great purpose to life. Lawrence, do you want to speak to, I mean, Parthen's always wrote something beautiful, which you added to. Do you want to say anything about that?
He was talking about the immunity of Daniel. When he was immune, I wrote that he was immune because he was obeying the law. He just wasn't wavering at all. He wholeheartedly, honestly lived his faith in God. And that's this, you know, desire to obey the law made all the other things that came up nothing to him. He couldn't be tempted. He couldn't be deceived by anything that came up. And, you know, am I doing that is the question.
Thank you. Yeah, he makes a great distinction that Daniel did not disobey any law, any of God's laws.
Yeah.
He only obeyed God's law. And in doing that, it did give him immunity. This is that thought of appealing to heaven, to go over all these human laws that say, if you do this, this will happen. If you do that, that'll happen. No. What does God say? And again, three things to handle in any with any problem. Cause, law, substance. What cause are you talking about? God is the only cause and creator. What law are you talking about? If God's law, the immutable law of God, is good and only good. And what substance are you talking about if you believe that there's matter that's going to give you problems? Or do you know you are in spirit? And then the last citation in Science and Health, Shardy asked me a question. The time for the reappearing of the divine healing is throughout all time. And whosoever layeth his earthly all on the altar of divine science drinketh of Christ's cup now and is endued with the spirit and power of Christian healing. And what did you ask?
Well, I wanted to know, what is this layeth your earthly all on the altar of divine science? I wanted to make sure I was doing it correctly. And you answered me.
Okay, so what is laying your earthly all? What does that mean?
Well, it's everything. It's not just personally. Everything that might not, that might be an error in your thinking, or facing everything, just putting it out, giving it to God. That is what I understood from what you told me. is. So I had to really think about that.
Anybody else? Your earthly all? Remember, it's earthly. You're not giving up everything. You're only giving up, as Mrs. Evans used to like to tell us, the three things you have to give up are what?
Sin, disease, and death.
Your earthly all, your beliefs of life and matter, that you're born into it and you die out of it. The belief that you are a human creator and created a child, or that you were formed by human parents. Your false beliefs, your personal sense of things. All of this is your earthly all. And you do have to get rid of it and put it on the altar.
I think Daniel's example is really beautiful. When they signed the decree, he went to his house and opened the windows and prayed instead, you know, not fearing that anything could happen to him.
Absolutely.
He gave it all. He gave it, you know, my life, everything. Here it is.
Yes. Trusting God completely. Appeal to heaven. Appeal to the divine law. And know that that is the only law there is, and that's the law that he was under. And he was under because of his obedience. Okay, anyone else about your earthly all?
Well, and it applies if you think that you own something. Well, God owns it, and it's in your experience for his purpose. For his purpose. It has a purpose. This is why you have it, but it's his purpose. And your family. Your human family. Does anybody own anybody else?
No.
No. They are in your experience for God's purpose. Give them to God. Your children. What do you aspire to for your children? If it's not for God's purpose, for them to have their own strong relationship with God and to find their own purpose in life, then something's wrong.
Or things that turn into idols, things that one possesses or seems to possess, put those on the altar.
Yeah, I don't own a darn thing. God owns everything that is in my experience. God owns my home. God owns my bank account. God owns my job. God owns it. And it's in my experience for his purpose. He has a purpose for it. And he has a good purpose for it. And if I will allow myself to obey God and his purpose for what's in my life, well, that's about as good as it can get. But when I interfere, when I think that I know what's right for something, or I know what's right for somebody else, when I interfere, when I tend to the regulator, as Mrs. Eddy says, that's when I screw things up.
She also says that God has a perfect plan for each one. So whatever he's given you, he has the perfect plan for them all.
Right, and what exactly. So when we do put it on the altar, it's going to turn out awful lot better than any other way.
That plan unfolds. And this, again, this is the getting rid of the personal sense. It's a personal sense of things you put on the altar, that you own it, you control it, it's all under your jurisdiction. And that is very disobedient in science. It is not in science at all, in the human mind. And that's how most people think. So we have to stay alert. And Linda, just, I guess briefly, you can talk, what was the definition of silence? Now that you shut everything off.
It turns off after a while. The definition of silence. to put an end to cause to cease, to silence complaints or clamor, to restrain from noise or speaking, stillness, calmness, quiet, cessation of rage, agitation, or tumult, and then absence to mention, which really meant you weren't going to see it or acknowledge it.
Thank you, and that's what you do when this voice, erroneous voice, speaks to you. You silence it, and that's in the lesson as well, to silence. And also, she said how she takes these notes, some of the round table, and then works with them during the week, and that is working it and making it yours, so you don't just hear it one day and it's out the window and you totally forget. You work it. So Gary's going to end with No and Yes by Mary Baker Eddy.
The claims of evil become both less and more in Christian Science than in human philosophies or creeds. More, because the evil that is hidden by dogma and human reason is uncovered by science. And less, because evil, being thus uncovered, is found out, and exposure is 9 points of destruction. Then appears the grand verity of Christian Science, namely, that evil has no claims and was never a claimant. For behold, evil, or devil, is, as Jesus said, a murderer from the beginning, and the truth abode not in him. There was never a moment in which evil was real. This great fact concerning all error brings with it another and more glorious truth, that good is supreme. As there is none beside him, and he is all good, there can be no evil. Simply uttering this great thought is not enough. We must live it until God becomes the all and only of our being. Having won through great tribulation this cardinal point of divine science, St. Paul said, "But now we are delivered from the law, that being dead wherein we were held, that we should serve in newness of spirit, and not in the oldness of the letter."
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.